Well, normally we hear from Dr. Becker on Mondays, but today Dr. Bob Becker, director of the Strom Thurmond Institute on Government and Public Affairs, joins us with a preview of the first Calhoun Lecture of the year.
We know that music can lift us up, calm us down. It sets a mood. I know when I'm driving, especially if it's a long, boring drive, I crank up some Bob Seger, and it's like an energy boost to get me through the last couple hours. Or when I want to relax, some Andre Bocelli, and you just sit back and take in the mood. It changes the way you feel. Well, this Thursday at the Brooks Center, we're going to be pleased to have Dr. Alice Cash. And Dr. Cash talks about the healing power of medicine. When I first started looking up some material for this program, I went to alternative medicines, and I didn't find much, and then I realized it's not an alternative medicine. AnMed, who is the sponsor of this program, AnMed Health, actually has a music program as part of their cancer program. And so this has become mainstream, hasn't it, Dr. Cash?
Yes, it has, Bob, absolutely.
When you think about music in the setting of hospitals, very often when you go there, you get this background kind of elevator music that you get numb to. Is there specific types of music that have specific types of healing power?
Yes, I believe that music, the music that is the most healing probably, is purely instrumental music that has the slow, steady tempo of the resting, healthy heartbeat. Now, for people who are very ill and the ICU or CCU or oncology unit, something like that, what you want to play is music that has a very simple texture. In other words, one or two instruments, has a fairly narrow pitch range, not real high, not real low sounds, not thick harmonies or loud chords, anything like that. And in the 20th century, quite a few composers began writing music especially for healing, whereas in previous centuries, composers wrote beautiful music that probably was healing, but they didn't necessarily write it specifically for that effect. And nowadays, composers are actively doing that, although I use a lot of classical music when I'm trying to help people find the music that's right for them.
Now, when we think about music in the whole panoply of healing in medicine, it seems to have its roots almost in the indigenous medicines of primitive groups, doesn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely, because we believe that the sounds of nature were the original music. The bird songs, waves lapping the shore, wind through the pines, all of that was the original music. So when humans began to create their own music, what they were trying to do was imitate the sounds of nature that they knew were calming and soothing to them.
Now, how has modern medicine today started to embrace this? I know when we talked to the folks at AnMed and we mentioned you were coming and they wanted to sponsor your program, they were very enthused. Do you see that same level of enthusiasm across all aspects of medicine?
No. No, I mean, one day that would be a dream for us, that medical doctors across the board recognize the healing benefits of music. However, the field of music therapy has definitely reemerged. I mean, in ancient times, in Greek and Roman times, physicians like Pythagoras and Hippocrates and people like that knew the healing powers of music and wrote treatises about different rhythms and different instruments, and oftentimes a musical prescription was part of the overall medical prescription. But as society became more industrial and technology began to rule, music kind of went to the back burner because physicians like things they can measure. They like, you know, medicines they can measure. They like results that they can measure. And they couldn't say, take two Mozart sonatas and call me in the morning.
But did they find that by taking those two Mozart sonatas, they might have not needed quite as much medicine?
Exactly, exactly. I mean, the purpose of music as medicine is not to supplant medicine, not to take the place of it, but to enhance the effect so that as much chemical is not needed, as much potentially addictive and harmful drugs.
Yeah, I saw a piece in an NIH report, and it was on nature and healing, and it was there was a fellow, Roger Ulrich, and he actually started measuring times in hospitals for people that had a view of nature, the amount of medication, the amount of pain reported when they were involved with nature views rather than basically closet views. Right. Are we doing the same kind of inquiry with music?
Absolutely. If you go to the National Institute for Health or National Institute for Mental Health, either one, and just type in the search engine music, you'll come up with hundreds of studies. Mm. A lot have been done in the field of cancer and pediatric oncology, surgery, heart disease. Just every area of medicine has begun to have music studies done around the world. I mean, and there are quite a few studies documenting that when people, for example, listen to music through headphones before, during, and after surgery, that they can take up to 50% less anesthesia.
Wow,
and
that's amazing.
Big. Because one of the things you have to recover from after surgery is the anesthesia.
And that could often leave the side effects are just so almost as debilitating as the illness sometimes.
Exactly, because the anesthesia slows down every bodily function, and you have to start from ground zero getting everything in order again.
Now, I went to your website, healingmusicenterprises.com, and we'll have it posted on our site at your day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed at the range of groups that you've spoken to about this.
Mm-hmm.
Is this starting to really catch on as a theme to look at music in all aspects of medicine, pediatric, as well as elder care, as well as hospices?
I believe that it is definitely increasing in popularity and physicians recognizing the effectiveness of it. I just think that people are so unhappy with the HMOs and insurance companies, medical institutions as a whole, that they are looking for alternatives to traditional medicine. And what we like to say, I was, as you probably know, I was at the medical school at the University of Louisville for about 7 years,
mm-hmm.
and they were very adamant about us calling this integrative medicine and not complementary or alternative,
mm-hmm.
because our goal is to integrate with other kinds of treatments as one of the many options a patient will be offered. But we also have the documentation of why music is so beneficial, how it works, and that's what I'll be talking about at Clemson.
Oh, that's great.
A lot about how music affects the mind, the body, and the spirit.
So the people coming to the Calhoun Lecture on Thursday, they're going to be able to get a sense of maybe even how to use music in their daily life to help them?
Absolutely, yes. That's one of the main things I want to give people is concrete tools that they can take away so they can begin incorporating music in their everyday lives.
Well, give me some examples of what type of music might be applicable in what kinds of situations.
Well, I think, for example, when people leave work in the afternoon, a lot of times they are agitated, they're exhausted, they're upset, and just having some music specifically chosen in advance for the drive home can be very helpful so that you don't just turn on the news and hear about more disasters.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, or get on your cell phone and call home and start arguing about dinner. I mean, if you can have music, see, it's different for everybody. I don't just prescribe across the board the Pachelbel canon for everybody, or Claire de Lune, or jazz. But there, for every piece of music, there's someone that will love that as calming music, and other people will use it for energizing. So what I recommend is that people start dividing the music they already love into two categories: calming, soothing, sedative music, and energizing, upbeat, happy music that when they are feeling down. Although sometimes I do recommend to people if they are depressed or lethargic, that they put on something that kind of helps them to lean into it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to just say, you know, don't worry, be happy, put on happy music, because that's kind of insulting. But I have a long list of music for people who are grieving, people who are depressed. You have to start where the mood is and then begin to change it slowly over time.
Yeah, that I hadn't thought of that. I usually think of putting something on that's almost diametrically opposed.
Exactly.
And then and jar yourself out of it. But it makes a lot more sense to
kind of
reflect and then come out of it.
Yes.
The business you have, the HealingMusicEnterprises.com,
mm-hmm.
I was also surprised when you started talking about some of the paper issues. You have a variety of essays and papers, and the one I enjoyed was the stuck tune.
Yes, the earworm.
Oh, gosh. What does that do to us when we get that tune? It seems like the music then gets you frustrated.
Oh, it really does. And I think almost everybody seems to experience this from time to time. Now, some people get it more often than others. But actually, there is a professor at the University of Cincinnati who did, I believe, his doctoral dissertation on this phenomenon of tune stuck in the brain. And, you know, there's so much we still don't know about the brain and how it works. But everybody has had this frustrating experience of having a tune just go round and round and round, and sometimes for days on end. And about the only solution that has been offered is to try to change the tune to something else at least. But there are, I think this man has come up with the top 10 offenders, and one is It's a Small World After All. Chili baby back ribs.
Oh, geez, you're right.
There are a lot of commercials that are intended to stick in your brain.
And they do. You know, we took our girls to Disney World and rode that, It's a Small World After All. It took me years to get over that.
I know. Well, when I was on my honeymoon, actually, a long time ago, I was singing a McDonald's commercial the whole time about you deserve a break today, so get out and get away to McDonald's.
Oh, dear.
I could not stop singing it.
Does music have a generational connection?
Yes.
For example, when I'm with my mother, and I like a lot of swing music, too.
Mm-hmm.
I have a wide range of things I like. But when I'm driving with her and I put the swing music on, she kind of goes back to the time when that was the music of the day.
Right. Well, what music therapists and music researchers have found is that the music of your courting years, whatever those years were for you, that is the music that stays with you your entire life, and especially in your, quote, golden years, is the most meaningful to you. So, for example, last week I was speaking to a group of recreation activity therapists in Georgia at the Unicoi State Park about baby boomers and music, an inseparable connection. And the music of the baby boomers has been popular with almost every generation since. I mean, I have three grown daughters, and they all listen to the music of the 60s and 70s as much as their own. But there's something about the combination of being a teenager or a young adult and having a lot of hormones coursing through your body, falling in love, and then the music gets cemented in with all of those hormones and wonderful feelings of infatuation, so that when you hear that music later on in your 50s, 60s, 70s, you get a little jolt of those falling in love hormones again.
Yeah, and it does. It makes you feel good to hear the stuff that you grew up with.
It does, and it brings back the memories. And one of the studies I did when I was working at the medical school was about therapeutic effects of music with Alzheimer's patients. And we found that even after people no longer recognize their family members, they don't know where they are, who they are, what year it is, they can still hear that music from their courting years and sometimes sing along, enjoy, smile, pat their foot, sometimes get up and dance. It's just really remarkable how powerful it is.
Well, Dr. Cash, the program is going to be called The Healing Power of Music, and Dr. Alice Cash will be at the Calhoun Lecture Series at the Brooks Center this Thursday, September 13th at 7:30. Public's welcome. It's free. A chance for a very interesting evening. Dr. Cash, I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Thank you so much, Bob. I'm looking forward to being there.
Thank you so much. For the Strom Thurmond Institute, I'm Bob Becker.
Dr. Alice Cash will present The Healing Power of Music as the first in the Calhoun Lecture Series tonight at 7:30 in the Brooks Center for the Performing Arts. Her lecture is open to the public free of charge.